Well, good morning and welcome to our morning Bible study. Today is July 1st, 2020, and we are in 2 Samuel still, but we are not where you would expect. If you're just following along the daily Bible studies, you would expect that, oh, well, we'll be in, you know, chapter 11 of 2 Samuel today. Well, no, we're not in 2 Samuel chapter 11 because we've already covered that in a Sunday sermon or a Wednesday night Bible study. I forget which off the top of my head. But we had to do a lot of skipping through David's life. And so if you're interested in that, you can go back and you can listen to the sermon or the Bible study concerning David's sin with Bathsheba. But today we're going to continue the material that we find in 2 Samuel in chapter 12, and then, of course, chapter 13. So we're just going to simply mention the events in the end of chapter 12, and then we're going to spend the preponderance of our time today looking at chapter 13, verses 1 through 21. So go ahead and read 2 Samuel chapter 12, verses 26 through chapter 13, verse 22, and then after you unpause your audio, we will dive right into the text. Okay, so basically, the last part of chapter 12 gives us some really basic information, which is that the Ammonites are destroyed. Joab goes, he fights, and he defeats them, and he tells David, he's like, if you want this city to be named after you, come and get it, otherwise it's going to be named after me. So David goes, and he assembles all of the army, and he goes to Rabbah, and he fights against it, and he captures it. And, you know, he took the crown, he becomes the king, you know, and they put it on his head, and it weighed 75 pounds, which, by the way, is, people are like, well, that's so heavy, nobody could walk around. Well, that's not true. You know, anybody who's worked, you know, construction, you know, and has used their head as a way of carrying heavy loads knows that, like, yeah, I mean, 75 pounds of gold on your head is heavy, and you wouldn't want to wear it all the time, but it's not like this is going to just, like, shatter his neck. So was it a ceremonial crown? Sure, but was it something that a person could wear for maybe a small amount of time? Yeah. I mean, especially if you're, you know, somebody who grew up in a culture where you constantly carry stuff on your head. You know, like, women in Africa can carry tremendous loads on their head for, like, really, really long periods of time. I mean, that you build up those neck muscles and those upper traps and your and muscles like that, and you know, you'd be well, not your traps, what would those be, your deltoids? I don't know. Anyways, they're shaped like a trapezoid, that's all I know. The neck muscles, you know, you build those up. I don't know anatomy. My dad's an anatomy teacher, I'm not an anatomy teacher, but anyways, you can build up your neck muscles really strongly. And so people are like, that was too heavy. Well, it's not too heavy. I mean, 75 pounds is a realistic weight for a very, very, very fancy ceremonial crown. Not something you're going to wear all the time. Like, this isn't a Rolex. You're not just putting this on everywhere you go. Although, I don't wear a Rolex everywhere I go because I don't own a Rolex. But you get the point, right? So, so David goes and he reduces the people essentially to slave labor. And this is how he dealt with the Ammonites. And David and his army go back to Jerusalem. Okay, so David has had the death of his son. He has had the prophet Nathan has confronted him. He has murdered Uriah. And yet, apart from the death of his son, it seems like things are going well for David. He defeats the Ammonites. He goes, and he's got a crown put on his head, and his power continues to grow. And so, is there any significance to chapter 12? Well, the end of chapter 12, I should say. Well, I think if there's any significance, it shows that even though David had done this horrible thing, a lot of things just continue as normal. Like, life does not stop for a king. Life does not stop for a nation when something terrible happens. And I don't know if that's deliberately put there like that. If this information about the Ammonites is dropped in here just to remind us that life doesn't stop, or if it's put in there to remind us of how this whole thing started, I don't know. But I think that there's some significance that, first, that we keep having this alternation back and forth with this battle between the Ammonites. Okay, so it begins in chapter 10. Remember, we spent a lot of time talking about chapter 10, where we, you know, said that, you know, David goes and he tries to show kindness to the Ammonites. So this whole thing started with David trying to show kindness to the Ammonites, and they insulted their ambassadors, which, by the way, in the ancient world, ambassadors are inviolable. You cannot touch them. If you touch them in any way, it means war. Well, they did that, and they go to war, and they fight a bunch of other people, and then After that, David commits adultery with Bathsheba. Why? Because he doesn't go out when kings go out to war. He sends his men out. He sends Joab and the army out to defeat the Ammonites, and David is sitting at home. And when David is sitting at home, his eyes wander, and he sleeps with Uriah, his wife, with Bathsheba. Well, then we get back, we get more information about what's going on with the Ammonites. And he sends Uriah because he can't get Uriah to sleep with his wife. And so he can't trick Uriah into thinking that the child is his. And so he sends Uriah to die in the battle against the Amalekite, or against the Ammonites. Well, then Nathan prophesies against David and says that what he did was wrong and he's going to have to be punished for it, and the child dies. And then again, we pick up the story with the Ammonites in chapter 12, at the end of chapter 12. Now we pick up the story in chapter 13. So we keep having this repetition of this war between the Ammonites. The war against the Ammonites kind of plays the backdrop against all of David's downfall, which is really strange because on one hand, politically and militarily, David is on the rise, but personally, David is on the fall. And so there's this dissonance between the public figure of David, who is growing and growing and growing, and the personal figure of David, who is shrinking and shrinking and shrinking. And there's a lot of significance there. And I don't know that I have all of that put together. I don't have all of that quite ready to you know, turn into a sermon or a blog post. I know there's something there. This is one of those little things in the Bible that nags at me. You know, maybe it doesn't you, but when I see things like this in the Bible, I think, golly, there's got to be something there. There's something there. There's a reason why we keep alternating back and forth with Ammon and that war. And there's got to be a significance to it, but I just can't get my finger on it. And so, you know, we look at these things, and these are the things that keep me up at night, to be honest. These are the things that keep me up at night. These are the things that get me up early in the morning. My wife would say I never really get up that early in the morning with the kids, but anyways. But this bugs me. I know that there's an answer here, and I feel like it's just out of my reach, and I really want to get to it. But hey, this isn't the place for me to work out my own, you know, my own struggles here. This is the place to teach some Bible. So let's get into the Bible, and let's get into something we actually know about. Chapter 13. This is such a disgusting and horrifying story that I really don't even know how to address it in a way that in 8 minutes. I've got 8 minutes left if I want to try to keep this thing to 15 minutes. What can you say about this? Everybody knows the story. David's son Absalom. Now, it's interesting that it doesn't say that David had a daughter named Tamar. It says David's son Absalom had a beautiful sister named Tamar. So already, Absalom, not David, Absalom is the main character of this story. Everyone in chapter 13 is in relationship to Absalom. He's the main character here. Now that sounds really strange, right? But it said, now David's son Absalom had a beautiful sister named Tamar. Okay, so Tamar is related to Absalom. David is related to Absalom. Okay, and in the course of time, David's son Amnon fell madly in love with her. Now, interesting. It doesn't say that her brother Amnon fell madly in love with her. It's David's son Amnon fell madly in love with her. Okay, so this is strange. Why are we using this terminology? Why aren't we using the word there was a princess? You know, David's son, David's daughter. Why don't we use the terms brother and sister? Why is it David's son Absalom had a beautiful sister named Tamar? Why isn't it David had a daughter named Tamar? Why isn't Absalom had a sister named Tamar? Why is this phraseology the way that it is? There's something here. We're supposed to be drawn to the relationship to David. Why are we being drawn to the relationship with David? Oh, yeah, because remember that curse that the prophet gave to David, that Nathan gave about what was going to happen to his children? This is called foreshadowing, friends. So Amnon falls madly in love with his sister. And by the way, the word is love. Hebrew, the word ahav, it's the word love. We can call this lust, you can call it whatever, but it's love. The Bible uses the word love. And Amnon becomes frustrated because he was lovesick over his sister, is how the NET Bible translates it. because she was a virgin, and to Amnon, it seemed out of the question to do anything to her. Now, that's a little bit different from the NIV and other translations, but it's probably good. And so Amnon had a friend named Jonadab. Okay, now, but who's Jonadab? The son of David's brother, Shimeah. Okay, again, another family relationship to David. And Jonadab was a very crafty man. And he asked Amnon, "Why are you, the king's son, so depressed every morning? Can't you tell me?" And so Amnon said to him, "I'm in love with Tamar, the sister of my brother Absalom." Okay, that's just called your sister, dude. Like, the sister of my brother is my sister. Okay? The sister of my brother Absalom is my sister. So, now, maybe if you had differing relationships, maybe she wouldn't be, you know, like, if there was by marriage, nope, she is a blood relation. She is a daughter of David. He is a daughter of David. But what is he doing? He's trying to separate her from his own familial relationship. They're trying to back away. He's trying to back away this relationship. And Jonadab says, and Jonadab, by the way, never really gets his, which kind of upsets me about this story. But I'm getting ahead of myself. He says, "Well, pretend to be sick. And when your dad comes to see you, say, 'Well, can Tamar make me some special food and I can watch it and I can eat from her hand?'" And so Amnon pretends to be sick. The king sees him and he says, "Please let Tamar come in and you know, feed me with her own hand and all this stuff." And David's like, "Okay, cool." And so he says, go to your brother's house and make some food for him." So Tamar goes and she does this and she gets the food ready. And he refused to eat when she brought the food to him. And then Amnon says, "Get everyone out of here." And so everybody leaves. And Amnon said, "Bring the cakes into the bedroom and I will eat from your hand." So Tamar took the cakes and she brings them. And when she got close enough to him, he grabbed her and said, come to bed with me, my sister." Now, oh, wait, all of a sudden, she's my sister. Now, some days I really wish I had a psychology degree, because it would be really fun to try to analyze this. She's the sister of my brother, Absalom, when he's talking to others about her. But when he's trying to convince her to commit incest with him, she's my sister. And what does she say? "No, my brother, don't humiliate me." Now, that word humiliate is an interesting word. Okay, the word humiliate here is a word that can be translated as rape. Of course, that's not the only viable translation here, but that is one that is pretty common. And I think the appropriate, I personally think the appropriate translation in this situation, but obviously the translators of the Net Bible disagreed with me. They were going more for humiliation, which is probably closer to the root meaning of the word. But I think in the context, she's saying, "Don't rape me." I think she's probably, you know, I think that's her intention. And she said, "You know, you don't do this. This is foolish. How would I ever get rid of my humiliation, my shame?" I think is how the NIV puts it. "You know, you'd be considered one of the fools in Israel." And then she says this, and this is kind of the most pathetic, and I mean pathetic in the sense that it evokes pathos. One of the most pathetic things. She says, "Just speak to the king, for he won't withhold me from you." Basically saying, "Let's talk to dad. You know, let's talk to dad." Now, you know, she says, "Let's talk to the king, and he won't stop me from marrying you." And again, you know, she calls him my brother to stop him from doing something, from committing a rape is what she's doing. She's saying, "Don't rape me, brother." But then when she's saying, "Hey, maybe we can get married," as, you know, just this desperate attempt to stop this horrific thing from happening to her, what does she do? She doesn't call him dad. She calls him the king. And so she's trying to say, "Well, you know, maybe the king will allow this." And it's really, I don't think that this happened, you know, rapid fire. You know, this is desperate. And but he refused to listen to her, and he overpowered her and humiliated her by raping her. And then Amnon greatly despised her. His disdain toward her surpassed the love he had previously felt towards her. I think the NIV says he hated her more than he had loved her. And Amnon said, "Get up and leave." And she says, "I'm not. You know, if you send me away, that will be worse than what you already did to me." And basically, she's saying, like, I'm not trying to be crass here, but, like, you break it, you bought it. She said, you stole my virginity from me. You stole my honor. You committed an act of violence against me, and now you owe me something. You need to treat me as a wife. And, you know, you and that's, it's really shocking. It's really hard to understand, but it's, I mean, this is where she is. And she says, you know, if you send me away, if you send me away defiled and broken, you will be committing a worse act of violence against me than what you've already committed. And he refused to listen to her. He called his personal attendant and said to him, get this, take this woman out of my sight. Not my sister, not the princess, not the king's daughter. Get this woman out of my sight and lock the door behind her. And she was wearing a robe that the virgin daughters of the king used to wear. And she's removed. The door is locked behind her. And Tamar put ashes on her head and tore her robe. She put her hands on her head and went on her way wailing as she went. And her brother Absalom, now again, Absalom comes into the story because Absalom is now going to be the main character. We're the relationship as David is primary in this narrative. David is becoming passive in his own story, and that's deliberate. I'm going to get to that in a second. But he says, you know, was Amnon your brother with you? Now Absalom calls him brother and sister. Absalom has no problem with that. Absalom knows the score. And he also, apparently, the fact that he mentions this means that it must have been fairly well known that Amnon had a thing for his sister. This wasn't a secret. And so, if this was known, did David know? If David had known, how could he have sent his daughter into that situation? But he says, now be quiet, my sister. He is your brother. Don't take it so seriously. And Tamar, and I you know, that is just a really weird translation. He says, you know, don't, the Hebrew literally says, don't set your heart to this thing. But Tamar, I think the NIV says she lived as a desolate woman in the house of her brother Absalom. And Absalom shows real love for his sister here. But it was horrific what happened to her. And then, now King David, now this is interesting for 31. King David heard about these things and was very angry. Okay, Anne, what are you doing? What are you doing about it? I mean, the law is a little funny on this issue. The law says that in the case of a rape of a virgin, the virgin is to be married to her rapist. Okay, that's if the father will allow it, and because, you know, the father could also reject that. So this was a clear cut case of rape. Everybody would know it. This is not hidden. But normally the consequence for that would be that the rapist has to pay whatever the father insists on, and he has to marry the girl, and he can never divorce her. But here's the problem. In this case, it was incest. Now, incest is normally death penalty. It's capital punishment for incest. But because it was rape, seemingly only Amnon would be facing the death penalty. Amnon should die for this. And yet what we're told is that David was very angry, but he didn't do anything. And Absalom said nothing to Amnon, either good or bad, yet Absalom hated Amnon because he had humiliated or raped his sister Tamar. Okay, so as we said, we see that Absalom is slowly taking over importance from David. We've seen that that David is impotent. David does not know how to respond. There's just everything is wrong with this story. Everything is wrong with this story. Something very interesting, though, that has never, I've never seen anything written about, but I've often found interesting was the fact that the word for love is used. It doesn't say he lusted after her. It doesn't say that he desired her or that he was enamored with her, that he loved her. And it's a very strange form of love that could do something like this, but it's called love. And I often don't know what to do with that. I wonder if he really did, if Amnon really did love his sister, but his love, the love part was good, but it was directed towards wrong ends. There's nothing wrong with loving your sister and admiring that your sister is a beautiful woman. There's nothing wrong with loving your sister's company. There's nothing wrong with that. Those are good things. But then to allow that love to turn into a lust, and such a lust, is clearly wrong. The whole concept that our culture has of love is very confusing and disturbing, and the Bible gives a plainer, a simpler, and yet a more confusing look at love when we're told that Amnon loved Tamar. And I don't think that's just euphemistic. He loved her after a fashion, and it was real love. The thing that he does is horrifying. Is it possible that his love was real, but the way he acted on his love was wrong? I don't know. I don't know. I think that's one of those questions that the text poses to us that we don't really get a good answer for. We don't really have a good answer. And so this passage leaves us with a lot more questions than answers today. But it is horrifying. It is terrible. It is everything bad happens in this story. But there you go. That's sometimes the Bible. We're going to see more about this tomorrow as we conclude chapter 13. And I hope you'll join us then. Thank you. God bless. Bye.